I know of in that. In fact, I went to my mailbox today and picked up my magazine, which is the Creation Research Society quarterly, which is published four times a year, and it has scientific articles on different aspects of creation versus evolution. And so I looked at, Michael has an article here on the Little Ice Age, and I looked at his references. He references eight of his own books and articles. So you can see, I mean, he's just well published. He lives in Montana, and he's out here expecting a grandchild to be born any day now. Hopefully he waits till tomorrow. But anyway, with that, Michael, come on up.
Well, good evening. It's good to be in the Arlington area again. I'm from Bozeman, Montana, but my sister lives here, so I'm out here every year. And she's in this audience, I might add. Also, I might add that I went to the University of Washington and came out a creationist also. That's when I had a chance to examine things, you know, from a scientific point of view. That's when I discovered there's hardly any evidence for evolution. That kind of got me involved in this, and wondering, what's going on? You know, why do they jump up and down and say it's a fact, it's a fact? That's when I started to learn about things like propaganda and things like this. Anyway, my topic is about the Ice Age. That's my favorite topic. I'm essentially a researcher. I've been researching for about 40 years, and this is my main topic. This is my favorite topic. The Ice Age, only the Bible can explain it. Only the Bible can explain it? Well, how? Yeah. Well, let me flesh it out and I will let you know. Anyway, as Christians and as scientists, we have hundreds of challenges in the earth science. We have lots of challenges otherwise, but in the earth science, this is a list of, I took 10 minutes to write down. Some of these I've worked on myself. The Lord has led me to try to answer challenges that the culture gives us. So that's why I have a model on the Ice Age, and I deal with dinosaurs and the flood and lots of challenges. Anyway, this is a quick list right here. And the Ice Age is one of those challenges. So, what is an ice age? An ice age is a great increase in snow and ice, essentially. Right now, 10% of the land area has ice, and mainly Greenland and Antarctica. During the ice age, it was 30%, mainly in the mid and high latitudes. And in the tropical mountains, the snow level is about 3,000 feet lower in the atmosphere than it is today. So a lot of tropical mountains were glaciated. Also, I want to make a point here. It's the last major event in Earth history. Last major event. I'm going to revisit this at the end and have a few concluding remarks coming back to this. The secular scientists have five ice age periods. This is their dates. I'm using their dating system. Anyway, the Pleistocene is the last one, and I believe that is a real ice age. And in their time scale, it was less than 2.5 million years. MA means million years. And then they have four other ones, kind of, I call them ancient ice ages. You can see them there. Those are the names, the times, and so forth. In fact, that one in the late Precambrian, it supposedly glaciated the whole Earth. But if that happens, from a meteorological point of view, the reflection of the sunlight back from the snow and ice would cool off the temperatures 100 degrees centigrade, and we would never get out of it. So it's really interesting to read the scientific literature to see how they deal with this. They kind of box themselves in a corner, you see. So they got all these ingenious, wild ideas how to get out of these things. But anyway, these ice ages, these four ancient ice ages, I believe are not ice ages. They're in flood rocks, and there's another explanation which I've developed, and they're in place by gigantic submarine landslides. But by the way, if I use the terms Pleistocene or Quaternary, that's jargon for the Ice Age period. I'll have some quotes for those who are in there. Anyway, here's the challenge that we have of the Ice Age. They say each ice age takes 100,000 years in their time scale. In that, the glacial phase is 90,000 years, the interglacial phase 10,000. And there's been 30 or more regular repeating ice ages during the past 2.5 million years. That's what they say, that's what they teach. So how do we deal with that? Well, Arthur Stoller, an anti-creationist, wrote this book, and he challenged us on the ice age. Increasing the duration of the ice age by a factor of about 10 greatly increases the stress upon the creation scientist, who must compress the events of 15 million years into 4,000 years of post-flood time. You know, I've read a lot of critics in creationism, and you know what I find? Most of them don't understand where we're coming from. So they develop this straw man, which and they get the case wrong, and they chop it down. But this guy mostly got things right. He did a lot of good homework. He's a secular, actually he's an atheist. And he got some things right. It was in post-flood time and compressed into 4,000 years. He got that right. So can we meet this challenge? Now here's how I handle challenges. And I think this is a great verse for all of life. Examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. Well, I'm going to hold fast to the Bible as God's word and Jesus as my Lord and Savior. But then I'm going to examine everything carefully. I'm emphasizing carefully because if you examine anything, something at the superficial level, you might know just enough to get in trouble. So you got to examine things carefully. If you don't, there's lots of problems that you can get into. So anyway, with that in mind, we're going to ask a few questions and answer them. First of all, was there really an ice age? Or am I trying to explain something that never existed? Well, where do we go to find out about an ice age? Well, there was an ice age with 30% of the land covered. Well, you go to presently glaciated areas today and see what they leave behind. Practically all the glaciers in the world are receding due to global warming, which I'll get on a little rabbit trail there. Since 1880, global warming has been 1 degree Fahrenheit. The way they talk, you might think it has been 10, 15, 20 degrees. No, it's only 1 degree Fahrenheit. And there's reasons why that's exaggerated because of warm biases in the temperature records. But we also know that because of correlations, we call them, in the 20th century, between the sunlight, based on sunspots, the amount of CO2 going up, and the temperature, that most of the cause of global warming is natural processes on the sun, and less man adding CO2. So our part in global warming is maybe 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880. So it's small. It's not a big deal. Anyway, when a glacier recedes, like the Athabasca Glacier in the Canadian Rockies, it leaves behind ground moraine. Oh, my cursor shows up. Okay. It's rocks of various sizes within a fine-grained matrix. A fine-grained matrix is pebbles, sand, silt, sometimes clay. And you find rocks of all sizes in there. Anyway, that's what glaciers leave behind. And also, in the front, they leave a ridge called a terminal moraine or end moraine. I'll explain these a little more later. And along the edges, you can't see them very well, is a lateral moraine. Anyway, that's where the glacier was in 1890. It's melted back almost a mile. It was out near, it almost filled up the valley to near where the road goes through between Banff and Jasper. And here's the lateral moraine right here, very sharp looking. You can see some of the rocks in it right there, piled up. Now, moraines are formed as glacier moves out. It moves the debris to the edge, and then it melts back, and it leaves a ridge along the edges that are lateral moraines, and in the front, called a terminal or end moraine. That's what you see with glaciers today that form terminal and end moraines. Also, they pick up a lot of rocks, and the rocks move across the bedrock. They scratch the bedrock in the direction of movement of the ice, and sometimes the rock will turn, the rock in the bottom of the glacier that's sliding along the bottom, and it'll form scratches in different directions depending on how it turns. Now here's a boulder at the Athabasca Glacier, and it's got at least three sets of we call them striations, or we can call them scratches. There's one direction there, and one going this way, and there's another one there that I can't see in this, but there's at least three directions. Also, the bedrock gets scratched. So these are features you see in currently glaciated areas. So when we take a look at areas that were claimed to be glaciated in the recent past, for instance, like where I used to live in Great Falls, Montana, this is the Rocky Mountain front right there. I'm 10 miles out on the Rocky Mountain front, and here's this ridge of debris right in here, broken through right here, and then continues where I took the picture. But that has all the characteristics of a terminal moraine, about 10 miles out on the plain from the Rocky Mountains. And when you look at the moraine, the material looks like similar to moraines today, with rocks of various sizes in a finer grain matrix. And when you look at the rocks, they're scratched in different directions, one there and a set going that way. And when you climb up on the Rocky Mountain front, you this is the first cliff above the Rocky Mountain front. There's an 800-foot cliff right there. But the glacier moved from west to east, up this way and down, and 10 miles out into the plain, it left the scratched bedrock, just like you see at current glaciers now. And this is in an area that gets up in the 80s every year. Glaciers are very foreign to this area. You have to cool the temperatures down in summer to at least 32 degrees Fahrenheit, but actually below that, as I'll get into. But anyway, these are some of the features you see in glaciated areas. Also, you see, here's a classical picture of a terminal and a lateral moraine at Wallula Lake in the Wallowa Mountains, a horseshoe-shaped moraine over Deepin Lake. This is 600 feet tall. I think I have a picture from the bottom. Yeah, when you look at it from the bottom, those are the trees for scale. It's 600 foot tall lateral moraine. And notice how sharp it is, as if the glaciation was not that long ago, which is a true statement. And when you look at the material in the moraine, it's similar to where you see glaciated material today. Rocks of various sizes, like this, in a finer grain matrix around the rock. So this area was glaciated. That was caused by glaciation. And that area around Enterprise, Oregon, gets up in the low 90s for high temperatures in the summertime. How are you going to get glaciation in that area not long ago? These features look fairly recent. And you find all these erratic boulders that are transported from a far distance, like this one southwest of Calgary, Alberta, the Okotok erratics. Very sharp looking. They didn't roll by water, or else they'd round those edges. So this had to come down by icebergs. And here's a very famous one in the southwest of Portland, Oregon. Erratic boulder. It's called argillite. It's a slightly metamorphic shale. You can see the shale look on it right in here, the platy look. It's been heated up and hardened a little bit. Argillite does not outcrop in the whole state of Oregon. This rock actually comes from Montana or Idaho or possibly British Columbia. How did it get down there? It's actually about 150 miles south of the southern boundary of the ice sheet in this area, which is Olympia, Washington. What's it doing down here? The Lake Missoula flood floated it down in an iceberg. Aha. And if we had a Lake Missoula flood, we had an ice age. So we definitely had an ice age. And when you add it all up, you examine all these areas, here's where the ice occurred during the ice age. In the northern United States, practically all of Canada, the mountains of Alaska, but not the lowlands, which is a major mystery of earth science. And a lot of mountainous areas in the western U.S. were glaciated. The Cascade Mountains were glaciated. And when you look at Europe and Asia, here's where it was, most of England, northern Germany, the Alps, northwest Siberia, and just the mountains of Siberia, central and northeast Siberia were glaciated, but not the lowlands. Another, like I said, that's a major mystery. And the lowlands of Alaska, Siberia, are where you find those woolly mammoths by the millions that are there in the permafrost. Another major mystery of what those woolly mammoths are doing up there. Some of them are our whole carcasses. Some are in a general standing position. There's lots of mysteries associated with them, but that's another talk. So there was an ice age. We need to explain it. But can the mainstream scientists explain it? You know, the way they talk, sometimes they make it seem sound like, get a little cooling, presto, we have an ice age. Well, what do we need for an ice age? First of all, we need cooler summers. Winters usually are cold enough in most areas where the ice occurred. You need cooler summers, at least down to 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Also, because cooler air is drier, you need a source of much more snowfall. And it has to persist many years. So talk about climate change. This is a monstrous climate change. And the secular scientists have a principle called uniformitarianism, where the present is the key to the past. How many have heard that term before? Oh, most of you have heard it. Good. Well, what that says is we use uniform present process we see today to explain the rocks and the fossils. Well, that's the same way in climate. So what do we have today in the climate that's going to cause huge cooling and much more snowfall and persist not just 1 year or 2 years, but many years? Are you getting the idea that maybe they're having some problems also? Well, how much cooling are we talking about? Well, I can use this area here. It's similar to Minneapolis on the edge of the ice. And this would apply very much to this area. In Minneapolis, the average temperature, which includes the maximums and the minimums, is 70 degrees Fahrenheit. You got to cool the temperature down to at least 32 degrees Fahrenheit for that snow to stay there. But it's solar radiation that causes most of the melting of snow and ice. And then we get a lot of it in the summertime. So you have to go well below 32 degrees for the snow and ice from the winter to stay. How far? Well, I went to some articles on Antarctica, and along the low altitude of Antarctica, I found out what temperature does it start melting. You have net melting, not starting to melt, but actually you have where it melts and then it runs off. What temperature do you have to warm up in the spring in Antarctica for that to happen? It's 14 degrees Fahrenheit because the sun is so powerful in the spring and summer. So you're going to have to cool Minneapolis to at least that temperature. But I'm going to be much more conservative and say, well, let's say the snow and ice will stay at least one year if the temperature falls to 20 degrees Fahrenheit. 20 degrees Fahrenheit for the summer in Minneapolis or here. That's a summer temperature drop of 50 degrees Fahrenheit. What kind of present climate changes or things they can project reasonably into the past are going to account for that? They're stuck. That's why there's over 60 theories on the origin of the ice age. In fact, there's one aspect of this whole issue that even has more theories, and that's the demise of the dinosaurs. There's well over 100 theories for that. So instead of being a feather in their cap, it's a major mystery of Earth science. It's like they have one finger pointed at us, they got three fingers pointed at themselves. A few quotes. J.K. Charlesworth, in his book called The Quaternary Era, on page 1,532, it was a 1,600-page book. It made great sleeping material for you in the evening, but I loved it. Anyway, he says, Pleistocene phenomenon have produced some great theories, an absolute riot of theories, ranging from the remotely possible to the mutually contradictory and the palpably inadequate. That's not saying much, but that's in 1957. And we know so much more now because this is modern times, right? Okay, well, let's get something from a more recent time. Here's the U.S. News and World Report. And the whole issue in August of 1997 reported on 18 great science mysteries. The whole issue was dedicated to that. But it's interesting that some of these great science mysteries are mysteries of their own making because they believe in evolution. Like that one right there. Why should males exist? What? Why is that a major mystery? Well, because in evolution, you should have one sex that reproduces what's called asexually in biology. They can't figure out why there's a male and a female. But that's where our biblical worldview has it hands down on theirs, because it says in the Bible, God made us male and female. Simple as that. That's one where we have one up on them by far. And there's articles written on this every year, sometimes even books written trying to figure this out. But there are some legitimate mysteries, and one of them is what causes ice ages. So it's one of the top 18 mysteries of all science. What causes ice ages? And to them, they believe in many. Here's one, David Ault, Glacier Lake Missoula and its humongous floods. He's professor of geology at the University of Montana, but he's recently retired. Although theories abound, no one really knows what causes ice ages. So it's a major mystery of Earth science. They can't explain it, is what it amounts to. Can we explain it? Can the biblical worldview explain the ice age? Well, first of all, we have to figure out, when did it occur? Did it occur before the flood, early in the flood, late in the flood, or after the flood? Well, I've already kind of given that away when I showed you those moraines. They're on top of flood sediments, and the flood isn't going to produce lateral and terminal moraines, so it's pretty obvious that the ice age was after the flood. So you'd place it, you have the pre-flood climate with a lot of evidence that it was a warm climate before the flood based on the fossils. There was a flood that destroyed it, 371-day flood, and then the transitional climate after the flood to the present climate. You'd place it in the transitional climate, which presents the possibility that maybe the flood caused the radical climate change for an ice age after the flood. Ah, well, let's check that out. How would that happen? Well, the flood was a gigantic volcanic event, among other things. And after the flood, you'd have these volcanic dust and aerosols trapped in the stratosphere, causing cooling over the land. We've observed this today with large volcanoes that went off. Oh, Mount St. Helens was too small, by the way, to cause a temperature effect. But some monstrous ones in the last 300 years, Mount Tambora, Krakatoa, Pinatubo, El Chichon in Mexico, these cooled off the globe anywhere from a half degree to 2 degrees Fahrenheit globally for 1 or 2 years. So we know these big volcanoes cool. So after the flood, you'd have a lot of this, lot more ash and what's called aerosols. Aerosols are very fine particles, about the size of a micron, and they're in that stratosphere. And so after the flood, you'd have so much of this, you'd cause an instant cooling. Also, where do you get your moisture? Well, the fountains of the great deep is probably, and the floodgates of the sky opened up. The mechanism indicates it probably had water under the ground that came up and added to the pre-flood ocean to cause the flood. Well, any water coming from down deep in the ground, like at Yellowstone Park, is going to be pretty warm. So you add this to the pre-flood oceans, you end up with a warm ocean afterwards. Also, you had a lot of volcanism during the flood, like the Columbia River basalts, is all volcanic basalt flows in eastern Washington and northern northwest Oregon. And so this would heat the water up. So you'd have warm water after the flood. So what's the significance about warm water? Well, the warmer the water, the more the evaporation. You can evaporate 7 times as much water into the air at a sea surface temperature of 86 degrees Fahrenheit versus one at 32 degrees Fahrenheit. 7 times the water vapor. So with warm oceans, the effect would be especially effective at mid and high latitudes where oceans are cool, though sea surface temperatures are cool today. You don't get all that much evaporation, but if you had temperatures in the 80s in the Gulf of Alaska, Arctic Ocean, you'd have monstrous evaporation to be caught in storms and dumped on the land nearby for an instant rapid ice age. And the mechanism would persist but wane with time because it would be tuned to the cooling of the oceans. As you cool the oceans, it loses its moisture. You lose its moisture, it doesn't have enough to overcome the summers, and so it'll eventually reach a peak and then melt. So the flood is a powerful mechanism to cause a rapid ice age. Here's a little schematic of the reflection of volcanic dust. Some sunlight back to space on volcanic dust and aerosols. But these dust and aerosols, dust falls out in a matter of months, but aerosols will come out in a couple years. So we have evidence that during the ice age, you had a replenishment of the stratosphere from lots of volcanism. Like J.K. Charlesworth says, Signs of Pleistocene, volcanicity, and earth movements are visible in all parts of the world. We had lots of ice age volcanism to replenish the aerosols in the stratosphere to keep the cooling going in the, for the summer. So it works kind of like this. Warm ocean, powerful evaporation at mid and high latitudes, volcanic dust and aerosols in the upper atmosphere reflecting some sunlight back to space, having lots of snow and sleet and ice and cold land. So that's how you form it from the flood. So the next question is, how rapid was it? Well, they say it takes 100,000 years for an ice age. Well, is that true? Well, this is my evidence that it was rapid right here. This is it, Jenkins. Indisputable proof that the ice age caught these people completely off guard. No, actually, the way I did this, I solved what's called a balance equation, where you add up the, for the ocean, it goes in the atmosphere. I did it for the atmosphere, but essentially what it says, you add up the heat inputs, subtract the heat outputs, you get a change in temperature, change in time. So you estimate the change in temperature, solve for change in time in this kind of equations. So based on that, I had to, first of all, make an assumption of what the average temperature was for the ocean after the flood, and I thought 30 degrees centigrade was probably a pretty good one. If it got was too much warmer than that, a lot of the fish and mammals like whales we see today wouldn't be here. Anyway, and then it has to cool to a certain temperature where the ice age stops, and then it reverses and melts. And I assumed that was 10 degrees centigrade, which is about 6 degrees warmer than the current ocean temperature, which is 4 degrees centigrade, this dashed line down here. So the ice reaches a max well before you get to as cold as it is today. And then it starts melting from then on. These are the figures I eventually got. But in the equation, there's no way to be accurate. So I use minimums and maximums for the variables. And then solve for the time. And this is the range I got for the time to reach glacial maximum. The best estimate was about 500 years. And then I had to estimate, well, how much snow and ice collected over the land. And I used minimum maximums for this one, too. And the best estimate was 2,300 feet in the northern hemisphere. In Antarctica, representing most of the southern hemisphere, about 4,000 feet. And then I used the energy balance over a snow and ice cover for melting, which is the best way you can estimate snow and ice melt. And I used a range for the variables in that. Like the reflectivity is one of the variables. Fresh snow reflects 90% of the sunlight back to space. Doesn't melt hardly. But when you age the snow, the reflectivity goes down to maybe 50%, 40%, so it absorbs a lot more sunlight and then helps the melting. So I had to use minimums and maximums, of which that was the main variable. So you can see my range along the periphery or the edge of the ice sheet. Best estimate was 70 years to melt it. That melts at about 10 meters a year or 33 feet a year, which is very close to the melting of Icelandic, Alaskan, and Norwegian glaciers today in the melting zone. So it's a very reasonable result I got. In the interior of Canada and Scandinavia and northern Northwest Asia, it melts slower. You have less sunshine, it's cooler temperatures, so it takes more time, approximately 200 years. So the total time for an ice age is 700 years. We don't need 100,000 years for an ice age. This is a case where we're challenged. They say 100,000 years, and we use different initial conditions, as we call it in science, and we get totally different results. Was there more than one ice age? They say there were many ice age, 30. Now I've read one report saying 50 in regular succession. By the way, this is not based on the land anywhere, because the land shows mainly one ice age. They get it from deep sea cores on the bottom of the ocean, where they measure variables down in that core that they bring up to a ship. And sometimes the variable, they wiggle around a medium, like this. So in one variable, it wiggles over here, it's a glaciation. They wiggle over here, it's an interglacial, and so forth, so on, way down the core. That's how they get their 30 to 50 ice ages. During what's called the Pleistocene. So, was there more than one ice age? Well, I believe there were two ice ages, one before the flood in the vicinity of the Garden of Eden. And this is the Earth's first ice age. Okay, I've showed this. Some people have gotten upset with me, so I need to explain it a little bit. You know, during creation, everything was perfect. It was very good. There was no death. Animals and man ate plants. And man and woman's relationship was perfect. But because of sin entering in, things don't work out quite so well. There's communication problems. And to be very general, women will have sensitivity issues and men have clueless issues. That's what this cartoon's about. We have communication problems. Anyway, serious, I just believe in one ice age. But to summarize this really quick, I'm going to quote from the journal Geology, 1994, from six geologists from the University of Alberta in Edmonton. And they wrote an article saying there was just one glaciation in Alberta south of Edmonton. Notice the title of this. I'll try to translate it for you. It's got a lot of jargon in it. A single late Wisconsin Laurentide glaciation. Laurentide ice sheet was the one over central and eastern Canada into the northern United States. Late Wisconsin is the time they believe in the single ice age, very late in their time scale. But they believe in a single ice age, Edmonton area in southwest Alberta. But notice what he says about multiple ice ages. Or multiple glaciation. Glacial reconstructions commonly what? Assume a multiple glaciation hypothesis in all areas that contain a till cover. Till is another word for glacial debris. They assume it. And when they see some complications, they easily jump on the idea that there was more than one ice sheet here. For instance, you have glacial debris, and then you have a layer of sand, and then more glacial debris on top of it. They would see that, and these features like this would be on the edge of the ice sheets. They would see that and say, well, there's been two separate ice ages here. But we know from studies of modern glaciers that one ice age can produce these features, because at the edge of the ice sheet, it moves forward, melts back. Sometimes it surges, moves rapidly forward, especially if you have a lake in front of it. It'll move fast. So with all this oscillations, you're going to get complications. And even well up in the ice, you know, you can get melting under the ice. Under the Antarctic ice sheet, they've discovered, about 50 lakes under the Antarctic ice sheet. So you can have a little water down there doing a lot of deposition of sand and silt and things like this. You can even have organic remains get caught between two till sheets. When the ice sheet backs up, woolly mammoth comes along there, dies, and surges forward and covers them up. So they know that these things can happen in one ice age. But most areas show only one till sheet, only one evidence of one glaciation. So it's an assumption. The multiple glaciation is an assumption. Will there be a future ice age? Future ice age. Well, what's the basis of that? Well, we're still in the glacial interglacial cycle. We haven't changed for millions of years. Interglacials last 10,000 years. And the last ice age melted 10,000 years. So we're about due. How many remember in the 1970s where they're talking about the new ice age coming? Because between 1945 and 1975, we actually had global cooling when CO2 was going up. Sea ice was increasing, temperatures were getting colder. We had some monster storms in Montana, where I was a weather forecaster for 30 years. So how many of you remember the ice age was coming in the 1970s? Several of you. So, and this is the reason, it's about due. And Daniel Grossman said in the New York Times in 2003, if the past is any indication, the Earth is at the end of another such warm period, called the Holocene, by the way, poised to descend into a new ice age. And of course, we believe everything we read in the newspapers, right? Well, guess what? You can rest and relax. I saw a few beads of sweat on a few of you out there because this place was glaciated. You'd be in danger if there was another ice age. But the rainbow is a promise there will never be another global flood. And the flood caused the ice age. Therefore, the rainbow is a promise there will never be another ice age. So in our worldview, there's not going to be another ice age. So in summary, the ice age was a real event not that long ago. It is a major mystery for evolutionary earth science. Noah's flood caused the transitional climate for an ice age. The ice age lasted only 700 years. We don't need 100,000 years for an ice age. There was only one ice age. So ultimately, only the Bible explains the ice age because of the flood. That's getting back to my title. Because of the flood, we can explain the ice age. And there will be no future ice age. Some concluding thoughts. Creationists have a viable mechanism for the last major event in Earth history. While evolutionary scientists are far from a solution, then why should we believe them for all those older hypotheses, which there's hundreds of them? They call them just-so stories of the past in evolution. The evolution of the dinosaurs, the demise of the dinosaurs. I mean, every organism in the fossil record has a story behind it. Why should we believe it if they can't explain the last major event in Earth history? Some more concluding thoughts. I showed you a list of challenges at the beginning. The ice age is an example of what can be done with those hundreds of other earth science challenges. And by the way, I read them all the time because I've been studying geology for 40 years also, and I read the latest earth science journals, so I'm well aware of the challenges they give us. And I meet them all the time. There's hundreds of them. But the ice age is an example of how we can approach it. Use 1 Thessalonians 5:21. Hold fast that which is good, but examine it. Let's look at the data first. Let's see what we have to explain first before we jump to conclusions. And that's how I approach problems and issues. You know, when I do it that way, often I find a solution within the biblical worldview in earth science. So that's one of the reasons why I've published a fair amount of material in the creationist technical literature. Also, the issue of time. We believe in a short time scale. You add up all the genealogies. Adam lived about 6,000 years ago or so. And we know there wasn't much time before the initial creation of Adam because there's several things in the Bible where Jesus said that, like at the beginning of creation, he made them male and female. So there wasn't any time from the beginning of creation to when people existed. Also, Romans 1:20 says that since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are easily seen through what is made. Since the beginning of the creation, there has to be people around since the beginning of the creation to observe that the creation that we see out there points us that God exists, that Creator exists. So time, what I'm trying to say is time is not a side issue, but a younger timescale sometimes is the key to solving mysteries that have been around for 150 years. Well, how so in this case? Well, they know about the volcanism causing cooling, but their ice age, each one's 100,000 years, and they have many of them, so they stretch all this volcanism they see in ice age debris out there into hundreds of thousands of years, so they become insignificant. But what if you telescope all that volcanism right after the flood into a couple of hundred years? It becomes a powerful mechanism to cool the continents of the Earth, to cause an ice age. So time is key, I found, to solving major mysteries of Earth science. And this is just one example I've discovered this. Another concluding thought. The ice age is based on the flood, the global flood. Therefore, the flood, one of the most despised events by the culture, is a real event of the past. Therefore, it is easy to believe the whole Bible, which tells us how to live here on Earth and how to go to heaven. So it gets back to the Bible as God's word, that we can trust it. Anyway, after 40 years, I published a few things on the Ice Age. The main book is Frozen in Time, The Woolly Mammoth, The Ice Age, and the Biblical Key to Their Secrets. This has a lot more information than this talk. This talk was a summary of just the mechanism, but this goes into the woolly mammoths. It goes into the wet deserts, like all the lakes that were in the southwest United States during the Ice Age. It goes into the what we observed in with fossils, that we had types of animals that loved the warmth next to those that loved the cold. How do we explain that? Well, it can be explained. So this goes into a lot more detail. And if you want to know about those ancient ice ages, this is an in-depth monograph on ancient ice ages caused by gigantic submarine landslides. Those are those four that I showed you that are supposedly older than the Pleistocene ice ages. Just recently, Kyle Justice of Canby, Oregon, filmed me out in the field for, we got 100 minutes of material out there in Montana, Wyoming, Oregon, and Washington, explaining the ice age right out where the deposits are in this DVD, The Great Ice Age. My wife and I have written some children's books, which are great for adults, we found out, to teach about the ice age in storybook form. This is the Ice Age, Life in the Great Ice Age, is seen from a 12-year-old boy, and we have a sequel to it, focusing on what happened to the woolly mammoths, uncovering the mysterious woolly mammoths. It's a story to teach you about what happened to the woolly mammoths. And if you want to know about weather in general, my field, the weather book, and ice cores. See, there's a lot to just this subject. And this is the way it is with a lot of subjects. There's just a huge mass of questions out there and information that we can provide on every major subject. So the Ice Age, I've really, some people say I've been in a rut for years. But anyway, this is about ice cores. They claim you can see 100,000 annual layers in the Greenland ice cores, like counting rings in a tree to determine their age. Oh, really? Oh, there's a lot more to the story. Anyway, this is about ice cores and tells you more about that. And I've written a book about the Lake Missoula flood, since my wife's from Yakima and I'm from Seattle. So we couldn't help but talk about one of the second largest flood on Earth, and I compare it to the Genesis flood, and talk about the controversy, why it was rejected for 40 years, despite hundreds of pieces of evidence out there in eastern Washington. If you have a chance to go to Dry Falls and those places, you blow your socks off, the evidence for such a huge flood. And yet it was so obvious, practically everyone missed it, except J. Harlan Bretz. Anyway, I tell the story in this book. And this is the only book I'm going to talk about that I didn't author, and it's because if you're new to this issue, you undoubtedly have lots of questions. We have lots of answers. This is 66 of the most asked questions in answer book for answers, and this is the answers book. Just recently, geology is what started this in the late 1700s, and I've written a geology book that's from grades 3 on up, Exploring Geology with Mr. Hibb, the cartoon character. And I live in dinosaur country, so I couldn't help but write a book on dinosaurs. But this is not your ordinary dinosaur book. I've been challenged to answer, answer challenges that they give us. And what is our challenge? Well, this is, how do you explain billions of dinosaur tracks in the rocks? Millions of dinosaur eggs. So this is what this is about. This is an explanation of them occurring early in the flood. And we have a national park series, one for Grand Canyon, one for Zion and Bryce, and one for Yellowstone and Grand Teton, all in glossy color. People come to us and say, we get all this propaganda in these national parks. We want an alternative. So we've spent a lot of time to provide an alternative for people that go those places. Also, I want to talk about one of my favorite resources. How many get Creation Magazine? How many have heard of it? Not too many of you. Creation Magazine is a full-color magazine put out by Creation Ministries International, 56 pages, no advertisement, goes to 110 countries. It's been around since, I think, 33 years. But anyway, it comes 4 times a year. And I speak for Creation Ministries International, so I'm authorized to give you a free copy if you're interested in signing up back there, but I'm going to give you a sample of what you would read in Creation Magazine. You know, people ask us, where do races come from? You know, the Bible actually tells us there's only one race. You know that? The human race. That's it. But where did the, I call them people groups. Where did the people groups come from? Well, pictures like this kind of give you a hint that it's just basic genetics, that it's just shuffling of genes. You know, Noah and his wife and his three sons and their wives probably had the genes for all the people groups we see today. And it was just a shuffling them around. Well, this kind of shows it. This is a couple that had a black and white twin. These are the two-tone twins. They're Jamaicans. They had genes for black and white. They came together in twins. And that's what they look like today. A picture's worth a thousand words. We can explain the origin of the so-called races just by shuffling of genes. Anyway, that's it. But I want to talk about a few websites. There's lots of free material out there. I have a website right there, and I have two large e-books you can read on geomorphology. That's the runoff evidence of the runoff of the floodwaters off the land at michael.ors.net. Also, creation.com, that's Creation Ministry International website, that has over 8,000 articles on it that you can download free. You got a term paper, young people? You want to get into a field? You have to Google something like dinosaurs, and you'll probably get 200 references. And this is for all ages, young people, children, scientists. So you have 8,000. Answers in Genesis has the same thing, answersingenesis.org. And ICR.org has quite a few. And by the way, for those that like to do some touring around the West, there's this group right here out of Hood River, Oregon, and Boise, Idaho, called creationencounters.com. That'll take you on tours of various, the Channel Scavlins of Eastern Washington is one area they go to, Columbia Gorge. We just were in Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Park. I was with them this time. Usually, this is only the first time I've been with them. But they'll go to Grand Canyon and other places. So if you're interested in these things, here's the website for that. So anyway, I thank you, and I'll pass it back to Hines or somebody. Here he comes. And there'll be questions.